Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. This particular edition of our briefings along these lines may be among the most important of the entire year. That's partly because of the person we are privileged to be able to speak to for this entire hour. Her name is Rosemary Jenks. She is the Vice President and Director for Government Relations at a superb organization based in Washington, D.C., but truly national in character. It's called Numbers USA. She doesn't like to admit it often, but she is also a Harvard University-trained lawyer, one of the smartest people I know, and certainly one of the most influential on matters we're to discuss today, namely issues involving immigration policy and practice, the security of our border, and the advisability of two different pieces of legislation that are to be considered this week in the House of Representatives, and in particular, the question of whether or not it is, under present circumstances at least, advisable for the United States to engage in yet another amnesty for aliens who have come here illegally. Some have been here for some time, notably the so-called DACA kids. We'll talk about that with Rosemary, among many other things. But we're going to get right to the question of what is the House of Representatives debating this week and why it will matter so much, not just to our country in the abstract, but I believe to you as well. Rosemary Jenks, thank you so much for taking a full hour of your time to talk with us about this incredibly important subject that you know about as much as anybody, certainly in official Washington, about, and for sharing your insights with us today. Thank you.
I'm always happy to be with you, Frank, and you are too kind in your introduction.
Not hardly. It's all deserved, and I'm so grateful that that you're going to help us make some sense of what is afoot here, because my takeaway from the last election that brought President Trump to office was that he couldn't have been more clear about what he wanted, what he promised the American people he would require be done about immigration issues and specifically securing our southern border. Let's start this part of the conversation, a focused discussion of what is going to happen in the House of Representatives this week, but just recapping what the president promised to do as a candidate.
Yeah, well, there is no question that immigration was, if not the top, one of the three top issues on which President Trump ran and on which he won. So it is disappointing that we are in the position we are in right now in light of that. And part of the problem is that, of course, President Trump ran on, campaigned on immediately ending President Obama's illegal and unconstitutional DACA amnesty program.
Now, remind us what that acronym stands for again, Rosemary. We throw it around a lot.
Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. And this was essentially a memo written by the Obama administration that purported to give amnesty, permission to stay in the United States and work, to certain aliens who supposedly were brought here before the age of 16, were in the United States by 2007, and were not older than 31 in 2012. So right now, some of these folks are 38 years old. And so these are not kids. You know, the theory is that they were brought here before the age of 16. Well, of course, we have no real way to prove that unless they have school transcripts that are certified and that those are vetted. But in any case, this is a large population, some 800,000 illegal aliens took advantage of the program under Obama's administration. But it's estimated that the population who may be eligible for, you know, under the same requirements would be up to 2.4 million.
Wow.
So we're talking about a large potential population.
And does that population include Rosemary Jenks, members of their family, or is that just the so-called DACA kids themselves?
That is just the DACA kids themselves.
No kidding.
Their families would come in on top of that.
So the estimates that we've heard of a couple hundred thousand or even 800,000 is unquestionably lowballing the problem.
It depends on what legislation you're actually looking at, because as you mentioned, there are two bills that are coming up for apparent debate and a vote in the House this coming week. One of them is actually very strictly limited to only those. Initially 800,000 were in the program, but it's now dropped down to 690,000. So the Goodlatte bill, introduced by Chairman Bob Goodlatte of the Judiciary Committee, actually limits the amnesty to just those 690,000. They have to have a current valid biometric federal government issued ID that shows that they've already been approved for the program. Then they would be re-vetted for criminal records and all of that kind of thing. And only they would get essentially a renewable 3-year work permit that they could keep indefinitely. They could just renew it every 3 years and stay in the United States.
But they would not be put on the proverbial path to citizenship under the Goodlatte bill. Is that right?
There is no special path to citizenship in the Goodlatte bill. Essentially, if the aliens, once they get their legal status, if they married a U.S. citizen or if an employer sponsored them, they could get on the path to citizenship through the same path that everyone else takes, which would mean they would get in the back of the line, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, that's one piece of legislation, the Goodlatte bill. What's the other one, Rosemary?
The other one is a so-called compromise bill that the Republican leadership in the House came up with through negotiations between the so-called moderate Democrats. I'm sorry, that was a Freudian slip there. The moderate Republicans in the House and the conservatives in the House. Unfortunately, basically anything that leadership is involved in on immigration goes terribly, terribly badly. So the bill that they have come up with would give amnesty immediately to up to 2.4 million, and there's no cap on it. So if the estimates of this population are wrong, it could be significantly higher than that.
And to their parents and brothers and sisters and so on as well?
Well, it creates a special path to citizenship for all of them. So after 5 years, they can apply for a green card. Once they become citizens after that, then they can sponsor the parents who brought them here illegally, and the chain goes on from there.
Yeah, effectively rewarding them for the violation of our law and creating a bow wave for a vastly larger amnesty. This is being called the Ryan Amnesty Bill, as I understand it. And Rosemary, we have to take a short break. We'll be right back with more with Rosemary Jenks of Numbers USA, and we'll further tease out what is in these bills and what is likely to happen to them on the House floor and why you need both to know and to be involved. That and more right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. Rosemary Jenks is in the House, virtually at least. We are talking with one of the country's preeminent experts on matters involving immigration policy, border security, and legislation bearing on all of these things. She is the Director of Government Relations and Vice President for the terrific organization Numbers USA. NumbersUSA.com is the website to go to become part of the Numbers Army and really work on these issues in a concerted way, as Rosemary does. Rosemary, is there anything else you'd like to tell us about the Ryan Amnesty Bill that those listening should know as they look at getting involved in this fight?
Well, there is one other important part of this. People may remember that back when the Senate had votes on immigration several months ago, President Trump came out and said that he had four pillars that he wanted in any immigration bill. And those four pillars were the amnesty part, the DACA population.
Now, did he say how many he wanted addressed in his?
He unfortunately said 1.8 million, which I think is, you know, another one of these guesses if you take the 2.4 million and then discount for various things. Anyway, I mean, all these numbers are really pulled out of the air.
Right. But it was a large number that he was contemplating at the time.
Yes. And he said path to citizenship for them, which was even more unfortunate. But his other three pillars were the wall and border security in general, ending chain migration, which is the family-based immigration that allows people to bring in extended relatives into the future and create entire chains of immigrants, and then also ending what's called the visa lottery, which is essentially a random lottery of 55,000 visas given out to people with a high school education from countries that don't send a lot of immigrants to the United States. So this is, you know, all of the, basically all of the terrorist sponsoring countries qualify for it. A lot of places that you wouldn't expect that we would be searching for, you know, the future Americans to come from with a high school education, and they're brought in through a random lottery.
Yeah, this is simply insane, I think it's fair to say. You could have terrorists, you could have drug traffickers, you could have criminals of every other kind. Sharia supremacists worry me particularly, as you know, Rosemary. But all of them get in simply on the basis of a game of chance. It's just absolutely crazy. Just back to the chain migration for 1 minute. Rosemary, if I understood what you said a moment ago, once these individuals became citizens, they can engage in chain migration. It's the question here is, can they engage in chain migration from the moment they get into the United States or not, which is the current arrangement. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, it depends on which family members they're sponsoring. First of all, any immigrant who comes to the United States, and an immigrant is by definition someone who's getting a green card. So anyone who gets a green card is entitled by law to bring in their spouse and minor children. So that's the first group that comes in with them. Even if they come as a, you know, a highly skilled worker, they're entitled to bring their spouse and their minor children. Nobody has a problem with that. The problem becomes when they then, as soon as they are in the United States, they can apply to bring in their adult children. So, you know, whether their adult children are 25 or 55, they can bring in their adult children. And then when they become citizens, they can apply to bring in married adult children and their entire family. And they can apply to bring in their parents. And then their parents can apply to bring in the parents' siblings and the parents' other adult children, and the original immigrant can apply to bring in any adult siblings. So essentially, this is how you end up with aunts and uncles and cousins and grandmothers and so on coming in through one immigrant.
By the way, I think that it's fair to say that Numbers USA has put this issue of chain migration on the map, not least with a series of terrific advertisements you've done that help people understand exactly how this works and how the seemingly innocuous admission of a single individual or even a single individual and his spouse and his minor children turns into this leviathan of immigrants that has profound effects. And we're going to come back to that in a moment. But so just to wrap up on the Ryan amnesty bill, are you telling me that it faithfully incorporates all four of the president's pillars, Rosemary Jenks?
It does not. It does not end chain migration at all. It reallocates a couple of the smaller, a couple of the categories in chain migration. But again, as we mentioned before, it leaves the parent category intact. So not only can everyone bring in their parents when they become citizens, but these particular DACA aliens who, you know, the whole excuse for the DACA program was, well, you know, these children were brought in through no fault of their own. Yes, they were brought in by their parents, So it was their parents' fault. The parents made a decision to break the law. And so the Ryan bill would actually reward them for doing that and set the stage for parents around the world to decide it's time for them to take that risk as well and come to the United States with their children. The Goodlatte bill, on the other hand, does meet all of the four pillars and includes a lot of other good stuff, as well as some stuff that we would rather not have in there. But it is a much, much better alternative than the Ryan amnesty plan.
So let's turn to the president's current view of these legislative initiatives, Rosemary Jenks. It's my recollection that late last week, the president made an appearance on his apparently his favorite television program, Fox and Friends. And he was heard to say there, I think unambiguously, that he would not support the Ryan amnesty bill. He would not sign it into law. Within hours, as I understand it, the White House was saying, well, what the president meant to say was he would sign that bill, as well as the Goodlatte bill, whichever one gets through the process in the House. Do I have that about right? And what's going on there?
Yes, you have it exactly right. And it is befuddling, I will tell you that. I mean, there was a shout of joy in my office when he said what he said on Fox and Friends. It was very clear. There was no ambiguity in the question he was asked or the answer he gave. And then White House officials and White House press people started walking it back pretty much immediately. And I think part of the problem is that, first of all, I don't believe that President Trump actually knows what's in the Ryan amnesty plan. He does know what's in the Goodlatte bill, because I know that Chairman Goodlatte has months ago briefed him on what's in that bill, and he has said he supports it, and the press office put out a statement that the White House supports the Goodlatte bill. But I don't believe that he has been given accurate information about what is in the Ryan amnesty plan. I just can't believe that he would support it if he had that information. On the other hand, there is huge pressure on him, on the White House, to go along with this deal. And, you know, I think folks in the White House are believing that this is the best deal they can get. And, you know, unfortunately, it's not a good deal. It's not the best deal they can get. And they're not going to get it anyway. They're going to essentially force House Republicans to take a bad vote on a huge amnesty that may or may not give them a border wall in the end. And then it will not pass in the Senate.
At least in its present form, it would presumably be subjected to all kinds of amendments and surgical procedures that would make it into something even worse than the Ryan version of the amnesty bill. Is that what you're saying?
That's absolutely true. I mean, there is no way that even the Ryan amnesty bill comes out of the Senate intact, and then it would go to conference. And so basically, it only gets worse from this point forward. And all of this happening right in the lead up to the midterm elections is disastrous for the Republican Party.
Yeah. I want to spend some time talking about that and sort of the prospects from here, Rosemary Jenks, but I did want to just sort of continue to tease out some of the issues that are at stake, because nobody understands them better than you do. And the rest of us have a real need to know what is going on here. If the president of the United States doesn't know what's in the Ryan amnesty bill, it's a safe bet that the most of the rest of us don't either. So let's talk about specifically this question of the wall and funding for the wall. I understand that Ryan and his apologists are insisting that there's $25 billion of funding appropriated in this particular piece of legislation. That's not the way the Congress works, in my understanding of it. There's a separate appropriations process, is there not? And what guarantees would, well, the president, the voters, for that matter, have that there would be funding for this wall if they go down the route of the Ryan amnesty bill?
Well, the leadership in this case has actually used a sleight of hand on this and basically said that they are going to appropriate, in other words, actually give out the $25 billion in wall money or in border money. It's not all for the wall. But we all know that any future Congress can rescind money or transfer money. So what they did in this bill to pretend like they can stop that is to say, okay, well, no green cards can be issued to the amnestied population if that money is rescinded or transferred by a future Congress. However, the problem is the very first step in this bill is that these, you know, 2.4 million or however many illegal aliens get amnesty. They get an indefinitely renewable six-year visa under the Biden plan so that they can stay and work forever with that visa. So the threat of holding back a green card from them means very little to Democrats who, first of all, if the Democrats take the House so that they're in a position to rescind this money, they also can simply pass a new law that says, okay, all of these folks get green cards anyway.
Rosemary, we have to pause again. We'll be right back with more with Numbers USA's Vice President and Director of Government Relations, Rosemary Janks, straight ahead.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are in our third installment of this incredibly important and very timely conversation with Rosemary Janks of Numbers USA. If you are confused about what on earth Washington is up to with respect to immigration policy, you need to be following closely every word coming out of this woman's mouth. I'm delighted she's been able to help us understand a bit of the legislative sausage-making process this week on the floor of the House of Representatives in our first segment and talking through some of the critically important elements that the president has said he must have if he's going to sign legislation in this space, several pillars of which are absent from the provisions of the Ryan amnesty bill. And Rosemary, just to stay with the issue of the wall, you've talked a bit about how it is unlikely to be funded. We've seen this movie before. I think it's fair to say that they promise you they'll get to border enforcement right after they get that amnesty piece done up front. Generally hasn't worked out very well, as I understand it. You might speak to that, but also to this question of what the implications are of turning on what I think of, and you certainly have taught me about this, is kind of a magnet for more illegal aliens to come into this country, undocumented migrants, as they're now genteelly called, as long as there isn't some real impediment to them doing so, as in the wall. Talk about both of those, if you would.
The wall, from my point of view, is actually much more important from a national security perspective than it is from an immigration perspective. I mean, obviously, if you have a physical barrier along the wall, along the border, it will slow down the person who's trying to cross over into the United States and potentially give the Border Patrol time to get to them and apprehend them. However, the most important part of having the wall is the national security part, which is if we don't know who's coming over that border, we don't know what they're bringing with them. We don't know, you know, if it's terrorists, we don't know if they're bringing weapons, we don't know if they're bringing biological or chemical agents, whatever it is. If you can't secure your own borders, you can't secure the nation. So that's the big push on the wall from my mind. The problem that we actually have with illegal immigration is that about half of illegal aliens actually enter the United States legally with a visa, a temporary work visa or a tourist visa or student visa or whatever, and then overstay. So a wall's not going to stop them. What we need to stop them is E-Verify, mandatory E-Verify, so that employers have to be given the tools, basically, by the federal government to verify that the workers they're hiring are here legally and are authorized to work. If you take away the jobs, you take away probably 98% of the incentive for illegal immigration. You will still get the criminals and the national security threats, which is why you need the wall. But the vast majority of people who either cross illegally or stay illegally are coming to work.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to ask you about this E-Verify program. I don't recall that that was one of the four pillars the president required. I believe it was in another longer treatment that he did earlier in the year, in which he laid out what a sound immigration policy would require. But did I miss something, Rosemary, or is it not something he's insisting on at the moment?
Unfortunately, you are right about that. He campaigned on E-Verify. He included E-Verify in several of his talks about immigration, but he did not include it in his four pillars. It is, however, part of the Goodlatte bill. It is not, of course, part of the Ryan Amnesty Plan.
Mm-hmm. And the reason it's not in the four pillars, is it because the administration has decided that it's not necessary, or it just wasn't as high a priority as some of these other items, or what?
I don't know if it was because they didn't see it as high as a priority, or if they thought that it was a step too far. I mean, you know, most people would be pretty happy if we got border security, the end of chain migration, and the end of the visa lottery. You know, we always want more because we want to actually secure our nation and know who's coming in and enforce our immigration laws. But yeah, I'm not entirely sure about that. But of course, for Republicans, and he's trying to get Republicans to do these reforms, E-Verify is hard because all of their big business supporters don't like it because it means they'll actually have to raise their wages to pay Americans.
So this speaks to one of the impetuses behind this ongoing immigration nightmare, doesn't it? And that is that it's not just that Democrats in Congress particularly, but the party more generally are all in for open borders and immigration deform, if you will. You have Republicans who are similarly minded, if for different reasons. And you've suggested that this is big business Republicans who are well represented in the establishment of the Republican Party in Congress, are they not? And their interest is in essentially cheap workers. Is that what it comes down to?
That's absolutely right. And, you know, these are the folks who, for the most part, are the campaign contributors to Republicans. So if somebody's giving you a big check as a politician, you're going to listen to what they have to say. You probably are not hearing as directly from your constituents who actually want to be able to get good jobs and make wages that are livable. So unfortunately, big business has an outsized voice in Washington. And, you know, that they know, and the establishment Republicans know, that if they don't secure the border and if they don't include E-Verify in, you know, the next amnesty, that we will be back here having this very same conversation 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, however long it takes, because amnesty always begets more illegal immigration. You're essentially rolling out a welcome mat for people to cross illegally. And if you're not taking the preventative measures beforehand, the doors are wide open.
Yeah. And Rosemary, just on this point, we've talked about this in the past, but I just did want you to speak to it directly in this present moment. We are often told by particularly those big business establishment Republicans that they need to have these vehicles for bringing in workers who will be paid, as it happens, less than the going rate for most Americans, because, as we're told, Americans won't do the jobs that are out there that these illegals will be happy to fill. What is your response and that of Numbers USA to this line of argument?
It's complete and utter nonsense. You know, people are using this sort of catchphrase recently in the last few weeks that for the first time in years, we have more job openings than we do unemployed Americans. That is absolute and utter nonsense, because the unemployment rate, which is granted very low right now, does not include literally 50 million working age Americans who are not employed. 50 million working age Americans who are not in the labor force. So all of those people could be enticed back into, well, not probably not all of them, but a lot of them to be enticed back into the labor force if they were being offered wages greater than what they likely are making sitting home on government programs. So, you know, we have a real issue in our society when our labor force participation rate is still very, very low. And yet people are saying, well, we need to bring in foreign workers to take these jobs so we can keep the wages down, which means we will never bring these workers back into the labor force, which means that very few people are going to climb to the middle class. The employers, the elites, essentially, are going to continue raking in profits on the backs of America's taxpayers, who are also paying for the unemployed.
This is clearly a formula for further dysfunction. And unfortunately, all other things being equal, further infusions of illegal aliens into our nation, our workforce, our dole, and more. Rosemary, let me just hit a couple of other issues that are very much in the mix, if not in the legislation that will be discussed this week. One is that we're hearing a lot at the moment. In fact, it seems no accident that we're hearing a lot about this separation of children being brought into this country at the border by virtue of the fact that Jeff Sessions has said we're going to enforce our laws more effectively, and that will be one of the things that we do to try to ensure that children are protected while parents are being incarcerated for coming across the border illegally. Could you say a quick word about that?
Sure. What's actually happening, Frank, is that when someone crosses the border illegally, they have committed a crime. If they have children with them, we as a nation do not send children to jail with their parents, right? We don't send American children to jail with their parents when their parents commit a crime. We don't send immigrant children to jail with their parents commit a crime. So the children are being taken to the Department of Health and Human Services and being cared for in facilities that are designed to care for children while the parents go to court and are prosecuted for illegal entry, which, again, is a crime. Once they get out, and normally that only takes a matter of days, they're reunited with their children, unless the parent claims asylum. If the parent claims asylum, it's a much longer process because of the backlogs in the asylum system. And so because of a court settlement from the Ninth Circuit, of course, we are not allowed to detain children with their parents for more than 20 days. Because the asylum process takes longer than that, the children have to be sent to the Department of Health and Human Services while their parents are processed through the asylum system.
These are two steps that are entirely voluntary. The step on the part of the parents to come into the country illegally in the first place, when they've been put on notice that this will be the upshot of it, their children will be separately treated. And secondly, that if they decide that they're going to seek to be allowed in here permanently by asking for the asylum provisions to apply, then they get separated from their children. It's up to them. Rosemary, we have to pause for one last moment. We'll be right back with more with the magnificent Rosemary Jenks of Numbers USA right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. It's our final installment of this extraordinarily illuminating, thought-provoking, and really consequential conversation with Rosemary Jenks of Numbers USA. Follow her work at numbersusa.com. More importantly, find out how you can help her and her colleagues in their important work, most immediately in addressing this Ryan amnesty bill in the House of Representatives and what is going to flow from it. And we're going to finish up the conversation about what all this might mean for the president in a moment. But Rosemary, just quickly on the separation issue, would you agree with me that we're seeing this hotted up as an issue at this particular moment in time as kind of part of the standard operating procedure of the open borders crowd to try to tug at America's heartstrings in order to essentially engage in this practice that fundamentally is transforming it?
Yeah, there's no question, Frank, that this is all about a narrative being developed by the left, essentially, complaining about, oh, the evil Trump once again. But the worst part of this is that Republicans are piling on because either they're on the other side on the immigration issue or because they don't have any idea what they're talking about. And either way, it's inexcusable because, you know, if you look at some of the things that politicians on both sides of the aisle are saying about, you know, this supposed separation of families, it is just ludicrous. It's like taking a campaign ad against, you know, your worst enemy. And I mean, the spin is just unreal. So I hope that people will see through this and recognize that for the first time in decades, I've been in Washington doing this job for almost 30 years now. This is the first time we have ever had a president in my career who actually wants to enforce the law.
What a concept. Two other pieces of this that really are very much germane to that point, Rosemary Jenks, if you could just quickly touch on them and how, if at all, they fit into this debate and the policy choices that we'd be making in it. One is sanctuary cities, as they're called, and the other is this horrifically vicious criminal enterprise known as MS-13.
Yet the provisions to stop sanctuary cities are fully included in the Goodlatte bill. There are parts of them in the Ryan amnesty plan, but the Ryan plan does not defund sanctuary cities. And if you look at the reasons for that, you have a whole lot of members of Congress, Republican and Democrat, who represent sanctuary cities, sanctuary jurisdictions, and they would all lose funding, federal funding. So again, it's a question of following the money. The people who are opposed to ending sanctuary cities generally would lose out on some of the funding. So that's why they're opposing it.
But it does violate the law. There's no getting around that. And that's really the point.
Yeah, it is one of the things that is most egregious about our current immigration setup, that cities and states apparently feel free and are not being punished for choosing to violate federal law. There's no other area where this is done.
It's scandalous. And I really commend the president and Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, for their efforts to enforce the law in this regard. How about MS-13? It turned into quite a hot political potato a little while ago about whether they were animals or they weren't animals. How serious of a problem do they represent to our society? And how does it tie into the issues that we've been talking about in terms of, national security as well as immigration at the border?
You know, it's interesting, Frank, because the MS-13 problem was dramatically worsened precisely by the DACA program. When President Obama created DACA with his pen and his phone in 2012, we almost immediately saw a surge in what are called unaccompanied alien children, UACs, along the border. And most of them were coming from Central America, and they knew that they couldn't be immediately returned. And so we were essentially bringing them across the border, or the smuggler would bring them across the border and then dump them in front of a Border Patrol agent, and the agent would have to release them into the country. They would be taken, spread around the country by the Department of Health and Human Services, and then put into schools and communities and with foster parents or their actual real illegal alien parents. And what happened was that became a rail line, essentially, for MS-13. So we've seen a big increase in MS-13 specifically because of DACA. There are large numbers of MS-13 members in this DACA population that Paul Ryan wants to give amnesty to. And, you know, there are provisions in his bill that say, no, if you're a gangbanger, you can't get this. Well, that puts the burden on the government to prove whether or not somebody is a gangbanger who has no documents, you know, no valid identification. And the government is then supposed to prove this for, you know, millions of people. And when I say that there might be as many as 2.4 million eligible for this amnesty, think about how many actual applications that will mean. Probably 4 to 5 million. And we're going to have to vet all those and make the right choice.
And more coming. Make no mistake about it. So, Rosemary, we're at the end of our time. We've got 3 or 4 minutes. Let me just ask you to sort of distill down what you've said to us about What's at stake in this vote that will take place, I believe, on Thursday of this week in the House of Representatives on the Goodlatte bill on the one hand and on the Ryan amnesty bill, the so-called leadership bill, not just for immigration policy and the consequences of it, as you've indicated, both national security as well as homeland security and economic security and public safety, but also for the President of the United States.
Yeah. You know, if you go back and look at the 2016 Republican platform, there's actually a really great section on immigration that says we should put American workers first. They're our most valuable national asset. Says we should obviously secure the border. We should get rid of sanctuary cities. We should have asylum and refugee reform, all of these things that are what we should be talking about. Nowhere. And it actually says we are opposed to amnesty of any kind. So here we are talking about amnesty and not doing the other things that the platform said we would all do. So we're in a position now where essentially everything is at risk for the president and for the Republican Party on this issue right now in the next week. Because if Republicans, House Republicans, vote to give a massive amnesty just leading into the midterm election, why on earth would the base go out and vote to send them back? You know, this will depress the base vote more than any other issue possibly could. Leading into the November elections, if the Republicans lose the House, Donald Trump will be in impeachment proceedings. There's no question about that.
Yeah. And just so everybody's refreshed on their civics, that does not necessarily mean that he will be convicted on whatever grounds he's being impeached by a process that will take place, a trial in the United States Senate. But Rosemary Jenks, you've been around this town for a long time. Just talk very quickly about what it would mean for the Trump presidency and the rest of his agenda, which I think has become important to all of us, as has his commitments to us on immigration.
Well, and that is the big issue. With an impeachment procedure, his agenda stops dead in its tracks, period. There is virtually nothing he can do because the entire country will be, you know, talking about, focused on, and it will be preposterous. I mean, obviously there are no charges against President Trump. So this whole thing will be made up out of whole cloth, and yet it will take at least a year. So, you know, we are wiping out his agenda.
And you're then into the 2020 election season, and nothing gets done even on a good day in that kind of environment. Rosemary Jenks, this is such bracing and such important information. I'm so grateful to you for taking this full hour to work us through it. And hope that every one of you out there have taken it aboard, as have I. This important radio broadcast is available as a podcast as well at securefreedom.org or whatever podcast platform you choose. I urge you to make it available to friends and family members and others who need to know. As I say, you have a need to know about what's afoot this week. It will make an incalculably important difference in all of the respects we've just mentioned. Rosemary, thank you so much for your work on this at Numbers USA. Come back to us again very soon. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.